From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Kojo Namdi Show. It's the Computer Guys and Gal. Of course, it's Tech Tuesday, and we're wondering if the world is turning upside down. Could the buzz around the new web browser, Google Chrome, mean you'll soon abandon Internet Explorer or Mozilla Firefox? Does news of Comcast limiting your web surfing habits return us back to the early days of dial-up, when you got something like 20 hours of Internet for $20? Mm-hmm. And what's with the computer guys being here on the second Tuesday of the month? Blame the Republicans if you must. We'll speculate on all these things and ponder everything from a new computer game named Spore to the future of free music services like Pandora. And, of course, we'll answer your hardware and software questions with John Gilroy, Director of Business Development at SolutionsDevelopers.com. You're a week late. What happened?
I don't know. Something about the Republicans. all I know.
I'll come clean.
Minnesota?
I'll come clean. It was me. Last week, I was so close to being late that they wanted to give me extra time.
So
I
gave you a week. That makes sense.
Exactly. Bill Harlow is a former Mac genius and is now a Macintosh consultant with Mid-Atlantic Consulting. Allison Druin is back from her long vacations and everything else that kept her away.
Betty Ford Clinic?
She's the director
of travels.
Sorry, I'll play along.
She is the director of the Human Computer Interaction Lab at the University of Maryland College Park. And of course, you can start calling us at 800-433-8850. You can send email to Kojo, K-O-J-O, at WAMU.org. The browser wars are on, John Gilroy. Talk about them and about the latest entry, Google's Chrome web browser. Mm-hmm.
You know, Kojo, I don't want to take advantage of your youth and inexperience.
Thank you.
But back in 1995 and 96, there's a product out called Netscape, and people were charging for it. And this upstart company called Microsoft took them on and gave away a browser, mm-hmm, and whooped them. The phrase is, I got Netscaped. Well, here we are, now 10, 12 years later, we have another battle on our hands, and I'm just waiting. It's going to be like the gladiators, you know? We've got a real good contender in one corner. Is, you know, a very, very wealthy company with an established browser. And another corner is a very, very wealthy company with all the tools to promote their browser. I think it's really good. I think from 40,000 feet, like they would do at these political conventions, from 40,000 feet, you could say, well, is this the death of the operating system? Is this the end of all operating systems? Because Google is going to be responsible for example, Bill will go to the store, buy a computer with no operating system on it, maybe just some kind of a batch file that'll start up a browser and do everything by browser. So that's the real big question. And I think to drill down to the nitty-gritty, if you look at statistics from StatCounter.com, what you see is you don't see Microsoft getting beat up much by Chrome. You see other browsers getting beat up by Chrome. So we'll have to see in a month or two what really
happens.
That
may be true. You get the people who go with the established one that's on their system, and then the other ones who are exploring alternatives, so they're all kind of fighting amongst themselves.
That's right. I would imagine that the migration is Firefox.
The battle is on. Let's take sides. First, you, Allison Druin, what do you like about Google Chrome?
Oh, it is so cool, that Omnibar thing. I mean, how awesome. Okay, here's what I found out. We've been working with kids with the internet and looking at search. These kids will type into anything, all right, that looks like a toolbar. So Google, smart. They made an Omnibar. That's awesome.
Put it part of the browser.
Part of the browser. So basically, you can put your address, your URL address, in the same place as you put your keyword. It doesn't matter. It knows what you're looking at. The startup page. Okay, so how often do you start? You want to start up on one thing one day and one thing another day. And so they have startup 9 thumbnails. You can choose from your 9 places to go. Awesome. Great. Okay, incognito mode. This is very cool. And actually, in fact, Microsoft IE ended up then also having it too. You know, hey, it's not tracking you. That's very cool. All right? It's very cool. I know. You know, but the coolest thing is the comic book.
I knew that would make
the
you
comic
know.
Book.
Right.
All right. The documentation.
Oh, but Scott McCloud. Yeah, that was cool.
It's fun. It's fun. You're going, oh, I can feel cool asking for help. How cool is that?
That was, 40 pages, though?
Oh, I know. Well, you know.
Finally found somebody more sophomoric than John Gilroy.
Yeah, the comic book is great.
What's bad about it?
or bad about it.
It's not for Mac.
Well, it's not for Mac yet. Okay, or Linux.
Even they're embarrassed about it.
Oh, pa. No, all right, so there's no full screen mode yet, okay, because it's in beta and they know it's a to-do. And you can migrate your bookmarks right now from your old browser, but you can't make new ones right now, so they know they got to do that. And they got a few keyboard shortcuts they got to work out. Ben Peterson's, my lovely husband's, already found two keyboard shortcuts.
Wait, you said it's already in beta, though. They're always in beta.
I know, it's true. They never change.
But being in beta, Bill Harlow, is Google Chrome using your web browsing patterns for evil?
No.
Oh. Exactly. It's evil.
We need like an organ for that,
evil.
Don't we?
Evil.
Cue the sound effect. Evildoers. What about those evildoers?
No, I mean, obviously, you know, they like make a lot of money on, you know, tracking, you know, people's searches and, you know, targeted ads. But no, that's... At least not yet. That's not the intent of the web browser.
So those innocent children, Allison, are going to be tracked for life.
Oh, man. If you don't think they're already tracked for life, don't kid
yourself. And what's cool, too, is it actually does phone home to check for updates and also for their anti-phishing and other security features just to make sure that it's the most up-to-date. So far, it's being a pretty good citizen.
Yes.
No bookmarks?
Well, you know, the nice techie guys that built the thing said, you can migrate bookmarks for another month or two. You'll live with those bookmarks to get some new ones. Anyway, there's some things that they really missed that they've got to put a patch in pretty soon. But they're working on the Mac version coming out soon.
I work with a lot of developers. They test it all out instantly, and it's fast. It's beta, it's got a lot of weaknesses and
apparently
Swiss
each tab
cheese,
is its own
fast.
Instance though, so that if you know a browser page crashes, you're not completely done in.
Yeah, well, it's been streamlined. Says, okay, how can we work with the web apps that are there? But the very cool thing is it's open source, so that, you know, some of these things that we're finding, hey, somebody else can start to fix it. And if the Google folks are a little too busy making money.
So much Kojo for Google Chrome. Here is Jeff in Washington, D.C. Jeff, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I don't actually have a question about the browser, so I'd be glad to hang up.
No, that's fine. No,
don't leave us.
We take any of your questions.
Political
whatever
questions,
you want
anything.
To ask about.
I have a really quick question.
We can tell you who to vote for. Go ahead.
I want to save a trip to the Mac Genius that's a ways from me. I have, for the first time, tried to download a movie, and I did download it onto iTunes, and now I'm trying to sync it to my iPod. And all I get is a black screen on my iPod, and I'm wondering, I've tried multiple syncs. I've tried going to the tab at the top for movies and just selecting that one thing. And I wondered, is there something special I'm supposed to be doing as it relates to that, or do I have a, you know, malfunction with my iPod? So I don't know if you've experienced that problem before.
Well, I guess I'll start with a really dumb question, which is, it's definitely an iPod that plays video, right?
That's a good question.
Okay, just making sure. I mean, there's so many
out
there.
That's the obvious.
So we got that out of the way.
Oh, my gosh. It's the first generation.
You'd be surprised.
It's an 80 gigabyte.
Okay. Well, I guess the thing I always check, too, is if you've tried other video and they do work and it's just this one movie that plays on your computer and not on the iPod, always try to restore. It's a good simple thing to do. Just make sure you've got, you know, everything else you've synced up on the iPod stored safely on your computer. And a restore is sort of like taking your computer and wiping everything and reinstalling the operating system. So I'd try that with the iPod and give it another go syncing after that.
Oh, wow, that scares me doing that.
it's all just button presses and waiting. The waiting's the hardest part.
You got to remember, I'm not a confident guy like you. I don't know all this stuff. okay, well, I will definitely try that, and if I get too nervous, I'll go in and check out one of these 20-year-old Mac Geniuses.
You can always send us an email to kojo@wmu.org also.
Okay. Yeah, well, I'm going to hold you responsible if it doesn't work. So thank you very much.
I like that part.
Yes, we like accountability here in this election campaign.
Jeff, every wrong answer, you lose a toe.
Jeff, thank you very much for your call. We got from Patricia in Winchester, Virginia, who said, could you talk a little about watching TV through a computer and what you need to do that? Also, can you watch movie DVDs on any computer or laptop these days? If not, what do I need to make sure I can watch them on my laptop?
I'm going to give the official answer, then the unofficial answer that will be expunged from the record. The official answer is, make sure you have a recent computer, maybe within the last 4 years, PC or Mac, because that'll have the horsepower to handle it. Number two, you may want to take and update some of those little utilities that run these videos. You also may want to make sure you have a fast broadband connection, 800 kbps, something like that. I would start at a site called Hulu, H-U-L-U.
H-U-L-U, yep.
It's a great place to start. They have all kinds of old episodes, you know, Jackie Gleason, all kinds of old, nice place to start. And then what most people do is they go to the standard ABC, CBS to get episodes that they might have missed, like the Sarah Connell Chronicles from last night. If you were at a whiskey bar with Kojo or something and you missed that TV show, you could go there. So that's the official answer. The unofficial answer is, you know, there's a high school two blocks from here. You could grab anyone from that high school. They will give you 40 sites to go in China that have any movie in the world. Now, movies that are coming out in 2 months, they probably have.
I could give you another semi-official answer, too, which is that if you're just looking for a TV tuner box for your computer, there's plenty out there. Like for the Mac, Elgato makes the iTV series of products where you plug an antenna in and you can, you know, tune in on your computer and then time shift like a TiVo or a DVR from a cable company.
See, what the teenagers will say is that the commercials on Hulu drive them crazy, so they just go to the Chinese site.
And you're listening to the Computer Guys and Gal. John Gilroy is Director of Business Development at SolutionsDevelopers.com. Allison Druin is Director of the Human Computer Interaction Lab at the University of Maryland College Park. And Bill Harlow, a former Mac genius, is now a Macintosh consultant with Mid-Atlantic Consulting. Allison, Comcast is testing slowed service, and they announced that they're limiting service to the biggest users starting in October. What's up with that?
The FCC, actually, John's been talking about this for a while, the FCC ruling on, hey, guys, you can't block one particular site because you know those are the people that are that are going to be sucking out all of the energy. So essentially, in response to what the FCC said, Comcast was ordered not to target specific sites. And so instead, what they're going to do is making slowdowns. Okay, so that 10 to 20 minutes of the biggest bottleneck users. Okay, now. Honestly, the average user is not going to be the bottleneck user, except of course if you're downloading every single movie in God's
from
creation,
China.
from China.
Well, look at digital distribution though. I mean, right now, a standard definition movie from iTunes is what, you know, a gig or so. But
right.
If you've got a PlayStation 3 or an Xbox or something, you're downloading game demos or a few gigabytes, high definition movies or a few gigabytes. There are entire games you can actually download and purchase now, and that's going to get more and more common, I think. And that could, I mean, the cap right now is what, 250 gigabytes?
250 gigabytes, that's the cap right there.
Yeah. It might just be a few years before that cap starts hitting you.
That's right. And that's the real question is, what's the target here, folks? Is this going to be a moving target? How do we know what's going on? And, you know, this is scary stuff. First we slow down, next we start blocking things. It's, you know, a list.
It would be a great topic for the conversation.wamu.org, I think, to just find out what the listeners think. I mean, if Comcast or if Cox or Verizon decided to cap your service, what would you do? Shrug your shoulders?
That's right.
Would you protest? Would you, go downtown and yelling? We've had this little 10, 12-year gap that's been great, and I think it may go away.
So your new job now is like suggesting topics for conversation.wamu.org?
I think it's a great job.
We'll post it. we'll post it because Gilroy says we must. Here's Mike in Washington, D.C. Mike, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I recently bought a Mac laptop for the first time, and I bought it in June, so not too long ago. And I'm a little confused just because I seem to be getting software updates every week to 2 weeks, and I was just wondering why the programs send out so many auto updates so that every time I turn the internet on, I'm getting pinged with four different updates I have to do.
That's pretty much par for the course with nearly every operating system and major program suites these days. So the software updates you're seeing weekly are probably from Apple, and they're things like any application Apple makes that's pre-installed in that computer, updates to the operating system, updates to components like the Safari web browser, the QuickTime, iTunes, all these things. They're bug fixes and feature updates, so the default behaviors check every week. You can go into System Preferences and turn that off, and you can just have it be manual when you check.
Oh, don't do that, though.
I think at least monthly, weekly is better, is good, because people generally slack off on checking for those things, and you want to be up to date.
How important are they? Like, because I generally ignore them just because I don't want to deal with the, 5 minutes it takes to download and run the update.
Well, 5 minutes of downloading is a lot better than perhaps, a few hours of downtime because of, some sort of a bug fix that ended up coming back to haunt you.
You see, but that's like driving with your, you know, your empty gas light on. You know, you can go for a few miles, and you might make it to this. You might not, but you know, it's a risky business. So you want to make all those patches. That's
you do want to do this. And honestly, if you're a Windows user, it's even worse. And they even the Windows updates. Oh my goodness, they automatically reboot your system when you least expect it. It's horrible. So honestly, it's not too bad.
So, Mike, thank you very much for your call. We're going to take a short break, and then when we come back, more of your hardware and software questions will be answered by the computer guys and gal, maybe. 800-433-8850 is the number to call. I'm Kojo Namdi.
I'm Karen Mathis, General Manager of WAMU 88.5. Today's programming is dedicated to Kojo Namdi, celebrating his 10th anniversary at WAMU. We thank him for his dedication and commitment to live call-in talk programming and for provocative conversation that connects your neighborhood with the world.
Alaska Governor Sarah Palin has ignited the Republican base with her conservative values and folksy talk.
I love those hockey moms. You know, they say the difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull? Lipstick.
But what message is she sending to working moms? I'm Michelle Martin. We'll pose that question to our Mocha Moms next time on Tell Me More.
Today at 2 on WAMU 88.5.
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from CDWG. With thousands of technology products in stock, they're there to get public sector customers what they need when they need it on purchasing vehicles specific to their organizations. CDWG, the right technology right away. From the Washington National Opera, presenting Target Opera in the Outfield, a live simulcast of Verdi's La Traviata, open to the public Saturday, September 13th at 7 p.m. at Nationals Park. Information online at WNOSimulcast.org.
Welcome back to the Computer Guys and Gal, Allison Druin, Bill Harlow, and John Gilroy, and your phone calls at 800-433-8850. Allison Druin, why is some guy suing Apple AT&T over his 3G iPhone?
Because it's slow.
Great. In a town full of lawyers, that's good news, huh?
William Gillis Jr., he's suing Apple and AT&T. He's really frustrated.
Is that Dobie's son?
I have no idea. But, I mean, there are a lot of really frustrated people out there because 3G is not as fast as, you know, as all the buzz was about.
I love this. You know, Apple released the first iPhone. It's too slow. It should have been 3G. Okay, here's a 3G phone.
It's too slow. I know. So, I mean, yes, you two can sue, but, you know, step in line.
And is the lawsuit originating from Washington, D.C.?
You know, this report was published in the Washington Post and not in the New York Times. I think so.
There we go. Out of work lawyers.
We may have enough lawyers in this town to handle that. Here is Hillary in Washington, D.C. Hillary, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, you guys.
Hillary. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, please, Hillary.
I can bookmark using Chrome.
You can bookmark, okay.
Yeah, it's easy. You just punch the star at the top left corner, just to the left of the address window.
Yeah, they're saying, though, that the actual interface for bookmarking, okay, is going to actually change a great deal because that's sort of under the hood, if you will, right now. And they know they've got to work on more expanded things in terms of bookmarking.
Oh, so but that's just because it's beta. But I think the bookmarks that I'm making using Chrome are actual bookmarks now, right?
Yes. It's just that the interface is sort of you stumbled on the right combination of things to do that. But it's not actually a well documented feature in the comic
book.
That's
the phrase.
Hillary never stumbles. It was the result of a scientific investigation.
Right, but Hillary.
Based on a comic book.
Thank you, Hillary. Okay.
I have to find the comic book.
Right.
Oh, go
get up
check
to speed.
It out. It's so awesome. It's awesome.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot.
Back to the adult world, Hillary.
Never.
Thank you very much for your call. We got an email from Warren in Ashburn, Virginia, who says, I'd like to hear your guest's opinion of the NetShare app for the iPhone and the controversy surrounding it.
Well, basically, the iPhone doesn't do one thing, and that's called tethering, where you can take your cell phone, connect it to your computer wirelessly or through a USB cable, and use it like a modem. So your computer can get online through your cell phone. NetShare was an application that was pretty inexpensive. You download it to your iPhone, and it made it possible to browse the web through the iPhone. So typically, those tethering plans, they cost money. AT&T is probably thinking, wait a minute, Apple gets a cut of this. This guy selling this program gets a cut of this. Where's my money? It's a violation of terms of service, so no more NetShare.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the end of that?
That's the end of that. Yeah. That's it.
Unfortunately.
It's all about money.
John Gilroy, do you spend more on getting data than you spend on heating your home?
Well, I think this is a wonderful topic for all the listeners to get out their utility records from last year and figure it out. I went to a test home in Fairfax County of a gentleman named Ray Gilroy, and I looked up his phone bill, cell bill, cable, and gas and electric, and this family, typical family in Fairfax County, they paid $208 for data and $220 for heating and electricity. Really, really close. I mean, 10 years ago, I never would have bet I'd spend more on communication than heating. Than cooling.
So that's... people should get away from cool, efficient computing and go to like old school, big, old school. Bulky,
like a grinder.
Hot boxes.
But take your laptop, put it on your lap. It's going to warm you up. I tell you, some of those are melted.
I'm just astonished. I never thought this would be the case. Now, energy pricing going up. This has all changed in a few years, but I think this is a fascinating topic.
So does this mean that if you want more data, that there can come a point where you'll actually like just stop heating your home completely?
Well, it's like
just use a laptop.
Put on a sweater and go to Google. I mean, that's the choice, you know?
I think all your studies proving is that data is too expensive. They should lower prices.
I think they should. But if that'll be the choice. I mean, traditionally you hear about these stories, well, geez, I had to choose between eating dinner and using the air conditioning. And now it's going to be, geez, I have to go to
downloading Chrome or
you know, watch a movie from China or heat the house. You're going to be
that's like
there.
Gilroy, who read a book on the dangers of drinking and decided to stop reading. Here's Mark in Washington, D.C. Mark, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, guys. Coach O, congratulations on your 10 years with AMU.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Yay.
Well, sure. Look, I'm running Chrome. Nice app. The lady who commented about bookmarks is right. It's not obvious how you create a bookmark from a tab, but I like the look and feel of the application. So what I would ask is this, a couple of questions. One about Chrome, which is it Mozilla-based? Is that the open source code? And what's going on with Apple and Steven Jobs and his health and the company? And I'll listen while you respond.
Ooh, good rumors. We love rumors.
So the first thing is, I believe it's based on WebKit, which is what Apple Safari is based on as well. So it's not based on Mozilla. What do they call that, Gecko?
Yeah, actually, it's Google Gears. It's actually WebKit is based on Google Gears for open source.
Oh, okay, cool. And as far as Steve Jobs' health rumors, he's looking thin. My understanding is everything he said is that's a side effect of the treatment he underwent for his cancer.
Pancreatic cancer,
which was fully treated apparently, but this is just a side effect. And I know people who work at Apple. They've seen him around the campus. He's not, you know, turtling up and hiding. He's fine. He just looks thin.
Gene Upshaw just died of pancreatic cancer, I think. I mean,
And they only recognized it in the case of Gene Upshaw a few weeks before he died because usually moves fairly swiftly.
No, but he has a form of pancreatic cancer that actually is curable.
Yeah, it was that rare form that was curable.
Yeah, correct. And it's different than what many of these people have, unfortunately.
Thank you for making that correction. This email we got from Iris in Washington. My DVD CD drive has disappeared. When my drives are displayed on my home computer, that drive no longer shows up. I've gone into the computer management and done all the checks. It tells me that everything is okay, but it is not. Help!
Help!
My system is Windows XP, which I hate, by the way.
Well, you know, I've seen this happen with, network adapters, with old-fashioned modems, with all kinds of things. And normally what happens is a driver is a piece of software sitting on this hard drive, and something happens, you know, voodoo incantation, static, something crosses over, it gets cross-linked, and you have to reload it. And so what you want to do is get your documentation, find out what kind of a, you know, driver it was, and go to the website and download it and reload it. That's really the simple answer. Now, if you have children under 5 in your home... It's probably going to be some kind of goo in there or bent or damaged. It may actually have to have a hardware replaced. I haven't seen DVDs pretty much last a long time. They don't have a lot of hardware failure, so I think it's software.
Oh, no. My three-year-old stuck a second DVD into the Mac drive, okay? And so before her older sister came back from camp, we had to go to the Mac Genius Bar and get a new DVD drive because it would totally fried everything.
Proves my point.
Okay, there you go.
Well, proves that you can't stick a second DVD into the drive.
You can, you just can't get it out.
Yeah. Welcome to my world.
Technically.
Exactly.
Here's Maureen in Washington, D.C. Hi, Maureen.
Hi. I have a question about cognitive prostheses. In other words, like if you lose your arm, you get a prosthetic arm.
Yes.
And if you are like me, I'm in the traumatic brain injury program at the VA hospital in Washington. And part of what they do is help you with artificial intelligence devices to help assist your damaged memory or attention or whatever. And I wondered if any of your guests had any suggestions or ideas, either for software type things, applications that help bolster cognitive deficits, or any like software games that help improve memory or attention. In one case, I know they're giving me what's called Pocket Coach software, where you record the steps in a task, and in between each step, you flag that you've done it and you move on, because something like for me to fix a meal, I might know all the steps that I don't know the order to do them in.
Mm-hmm. Here's Allison Drouin.
Wow. Hi. Great question.
Indeed.
And in fact, many online games, believe it or not, just in general, they don't have to be created specifically as cognitive tools, will be very, very helpful to you. In fact, the new game, Spore, okay, which is out, could really be helpful for you because it's got a lot of tool building, a lot of creation of things. It's not just about following one path. It's actually about creating things. So the more kinds of software tools that you can get at that allow you to create things, the better you're going to be.
Okay, and is the name of the game again?
Spore.
S-P-O-R-E.
Okay.
And how do you get it?
You can go online and get it, or you can go to your local stores. It's now just out.
Okay.
You can go to kojoshow.org, click on Computer Guys.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your call. And speaking of rumors, Bill Harlow, first about Steve Jobs, there's a rumor that in just about 27 minutes that Apple is hosting a special music event, and all kinds of rumors are circulating about what's likely to happen there.
Well, it's called the Let's Rock event.
Yeah, Let's Rock, dude.
Dude.
And, you know, it's got, you know, the classic, like, iPod silhouette guy. So I think we have an idea what it's about.
We have a hint.
I don't think there's going to be new servers at this event. So, the rumors are possibly new iPods, iPod Nanos. There have been a few sites like Mac Rumors where they've actually shown supposed product shots of this thing. And it's kind of sleek looking. Rather than that chiclet that they're selling now, it's got a wide screen. It's tall and skinny again. And one guy, Kevin Rose, who founded the website dig.com, on his blog, he said that there's a chance it could be a new iTunes 8 with a bunch of new features, a new visualizer, which is a little on-screen animation that sort of dances to the music. And the one he's describing sounds really cool. It's like these orbiting spheres that bounce off each other, and it's really bright and beautiful. And possibly iPod Touch 2.1 software, possibly iPhone 2.1 software with some hidden features. It's all just vague enough that it could be true or not.
If you look at the 5 or 6 year marketing trends, what you see is that Apple will typically release a product with increased features, but hold the price.
Right.
And
yes.
So you're not going to see $30 iPods.
Well, they already got a $30 iPod to shuffle.
Yeah, but you'll see more features for the same price, $200.
Well, actually, I don't know. They might lower the price because the iPhone's so cheap now that it's a tough value proposition to get like an iPod Touch.
That's right. That's right.
Somebody mentioned Spore. Allison Drouin, this was 7 years in the making.
Yeah, 7 to 8 years. It's so incredible. It's by Will Wright, who is the game designer, incredibly successful game designer who did this whole Sims series.
Yeah, SimCity, The Sims.
Oh, incredibly. Oh, yeah. The man is a genius. And essentially, the idea behind this game is that you travel from being a single-cell microbe to evolving into an intelligent multi-cell creature. And, yes, John, you too.
I'm curious about Will Wright. Sounds like a freelance writer, doesn't it?
Man.
That's the signal. Let's get back to the
Allison, please continue.
Help us. Here is Sandra in Bethesda, Maryland. Sandra, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. I have been having fits about trying to get a PDF set up. My computer is 1 year old. It's a Dell. It's a home basic. And I've been trying to find out how to download and how to set up one of the, they say they have a free Adobe Acrobat that you can get from Google. And I tried doing it. To make a long story short, I managed to download the first part of the program, and then my brand new Norton detector, spyware detector, won't allow me to download this PDF program. Mm. Is there anything you can tell me to help me out here?
John Gilroy?
Well, a couple concepts here. One's the reader. One is an actual tool that'll create PDF files. And you just kind of, I would go to Adobe, not Google. I'd go to Adobe and download.
Yeah, I did go to Adobe.
Oh, I thought you went to Google.
Well, I did Google first, of course. But
okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I would go to Adobe and download the PDF. So the PDF reader is a very, very small, short download. I mean, I've never had any problem 2 or 3 minutes downloading the reader. I mean, real fast. Are you using a dial-up account or a fast account?
I'm sorry, what?
Sandra, what kind of a dial-up access do you have? What kind of speed access do you have? Do you have a high-speed account, like a broadband account?
No, I don't.
So you have dial-up or DSL or?
Oh, no, I have DSL lines.
Okay, so you have DSL
lines. I'm not very savvy about computer stuff, so bear with me.
But did you install it once you downloaded it? Because the other day, I literally, of course, yes, I had another disk meltdown. Don't go into this with me. Okay.
I couldn't install it. They didn't let me install it. Norton kept sending messages that they don't want me to install. It can't be installed or something like that.
Well, maybe there's a security setting on Norton that's prohibiting downloads or prohibiting
That's right, yes.
And so, I mean, it's just there's thousands and thousands. Probably this hour there's been 2,000 downloads of the PDF reader. It's so popular. I can't see how Norton would prevent that.
Well, even if they did, there might be an option in the Norton control panel to turn it off. And I think they'll let you turn it off for you can turn it off for 5 minutes, which might give you enough time to do this. And then you'll be able to have it come back on automatically.
Look in your Norton control panel and see if there's an option to shut it off.
Yes. My control panel.
It's probably just protecting you, Sandra. That's what it's doing.
Overprotecting you. It's a bad parent, okay?
All right. Okay. And so a friend of mine said, I don't have any PDF documents on my machine. So I looked around and I didn't have any PDF documents. Somebody said to download it from like a good protected site like Montgomery County Government, et cetera. And I'm trying to do that. Can I?
You mean
set
the free Adobe, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah. No, if you want to just get a free PDF, my favorite site for free PDF files is irs.gov.
Oh, that's a good one. I didn't think of
that. That's as safe as you're going to get.
Yeah.
That's a protective site.
Yeah, okay. I know the CIO over there. It's a really safe site.
Sandra, thank you very much for your call and good luck to you. We got this email from, I don't know. Could you please talk about the ramifications of Apple being ill-prepared for the number of developers that wanted to develop iPhone applications? Thousands of developers wait weeks to find out if they have been approved, evaluated only on what types of applications they say they'd like to develop, only to be denied access to the program. Without access, your only option is to jailbreak the phone, which is fine for basement renegade developers, but hurts bona fide businesses developing corporate applications. Isn't Apple hurting themselves by not using a qualified evaluation process for their developer network? Instead of a useful balance, it seems we may be doomed to endless social networking applications.
I do see a name here, MJ Nash, it looks like. Well, first of all, rogue basement developers, they have to eat too. But in all seriousness, a lot of the rogue basement apps did go on to become legitimate applications on the App Store. So,
absolutely.
I mean, the Apple was a rogue garage app.
Right, exactly.
Years ago.
Exactly. I think the ramifications, hopefully, I'm sure Apple's aware of this and they're looking at, trying to ramp up and scale up as fast as possible. The store's been out since mid-July, so it's going to take some time. I mean, this was a need that they had to fill very quickly and they were pretty aggressive about doing it. That said, I do agree that there are a lot of social networking apps. A lot of stuff's overrepresented, and there's a lot of stuff that I'm surprised made it on there in the first place, given that Apple was supposed to be reviewing the submissions and making sure that, the best stuff makes it onto the site. I mean, the legendary I Am Rich application is a good example of that.
Here's a fun fact. There's over 200,000 social networking sites out there.
200,000?
Yeah.
And not one would let you join?
I think probably 201.
Pretty smart.
It is a lot of them out there. I'm just shocked at the number. But
So maybe the number of programs isn't that high then, all things considered.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, more of your questions for the computer guys and gal. 800-433-8850. Or you can send email to kojo@wamu.org. I'm Kojo Nandi. Coming up at 1, whether college students should be allowed to vote at their university addresses inside a growing election year controversy, plus trying to remedy the out-of-balance predator-prey relationship in the animal world. Today at 1 on the Kojo Nandi Show on WAMU 88.5.
Alaska Governor Sarah Palin has ignited the Republican base with her conservative values and folksy talk.
I love those hockey moms. You know, they say the difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull? Lipstick.
But what message is she sending to working moms? I'm Michelle Martin. We'll pose that question to our Mocha Moms next time on Tell Me More.
Today at 2 on WAMU 88.5.
And coming up at 3 on Fresh Air, Bob Woodward talks about his fourth book, chronicling the Bush administration, titled The War Within, A Secret White House History, 2006 to 2008. It's about dissension within the Bush administration and the military over strategy in Iraq, including the surge. That's on Fresh Air. It's coming up at 3 on WAMU 88.5. Expect rain in the Washington-Baltimore area in the next hour to 90 minutes. We remain under a severe thunderstorm watch for both areas until 4 this afternoon, and a flash flood watch until 8 tonight. 81 degrees in Northwest Washington as we return to the Kojo Nandi Show.
Computer gal Allison Druin is director of the Human-Computer Interaction Lab at the University of Maryland College Park. Computer guy Bill Harlow is a former Mac genius, now a Macintosh consultant with Mid-Atlantic Consultant. And computer guy John Gilroy is director of business development at solutionsdevelopers.com. Here is Liz in Fairfax, Virginia. Liz, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, guys. I'm a devoted Macintosh user, and my iBook G4 is on its very last legs, and I've been trying to hang on until the next generation of MacBooks comes out, but I can't tell when that's going to be, and I'm wondering if you have any conventional wisdom about if I hang on for another month or two, am I likely to get in on the next generation, or should I just pack it in? I'm worried about my computer making it. So
I say, if you're worried about computer making it, you need to get a new computer. You don't need to wait for the next MacBook with, you know, a minor speed bump and a few new features. You know, get the computer when you need it. There's no conventional wisdom really with Apple. It's just, you know, when they feel like releasing it.
You mean, Bill, you're not the Oracle of the Potomac?
I'm not. And even if I was, I wouldn't be able to figure that out. An Oracle cannot figure out what Apple is going to do next. So he would be of no help either.
Put that on your...
Can I just amplify one second?
Sure.
The real issue I have is that I can't afford to buy a new computer every couple of years. So I usually try to get a computer that has the biggest memory and the most power that I can get when I get them, so that they'll last a while. And that's it's not the cool features, it's the amount of memory and the size of the hard drive that I'm really thinking about.
Sure, I understand that. With the MacBooks, at least, though, I figure if they're going to update it, it'll be a minor speed bump in the CPU. You can certainly add more memory to today's MacBooks. They can take up to 4 gigabytes now, which is plenty. And actually, the hard drive in those things is really easy to replace. You pop out the battery and you pop out one little panel, and there's the memory and the hard drive. So.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's really easy.
Yeah, no, it's great.
So there's no real reason to wait.
I don't think so. I mean, it's an Intel Core 2 Duo chipset or some variant. It's going to be pretty fast, and I think that you should get more than 2 years out of it pretty easily.
Liz, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
We haven't had a chance to discuss the fact that Barack Obama announced his vice presidential pick by way of text message, but there were some results from that people didn't find too favorable, Allison.
Yeah, the carrier's messaging systems were totally overwhelmed with the number of people that he had to send the message to. So they sent messages out around 3 a.m., okay? And some people had to wait as long as 12 hours before they got their message. Now, I decided I'm going old-fashioned, and I got my email message around breakfast time. But the total last century media figured out his pick at 1 a.m., folks. So, you know, it was really interesting who knew what and when. But it was a fabulous, fabulous way for the campaign, obviously, to collect all those cell phone numbers. But also, man, it got people totally psyched, you know, that they were part of hearing it first. You know, now, granted, hang out with the media, you'd hear it more first.
Well, I was about to say we were totally upset that we weren't the ones who broke the story. The entire media. Here's Dave in Arlington, Virginia. Dave, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Kojo. First of all, I just want to say congratulations. It's really nice to have you on the air in this area.
Thank you.
But what I was going to say, other than that, was you recommended everybody get updates as many times as they can. Well, there are certain proprietary programs that end users might have that the updates will actually not allow the programs to work. Pro Tools being one of them, which is a music production program, an industry standard program, that was not compatible with the new Mac software until just recently. So getting an update every time an update is available is not always the best solution. That's pretty much why I called to say it.
That's actually a good point.
Yeah,
because, in fact, I have a special software that I run that with a version that only works with Java, okay, with a certain version of
right.
Java. And so you do have to be sensitive to any of your special software that is not, you know. But we're talking about operating
systems. I
think
we're talking in general,
right.
Well, too.
Well, I mean, when I was in school, I was taught that, you know, basically you would choose the software application you were going to run, then you would choose your computer.
Ah, well, that's interesting.
I mean, with Pro Tools, with Pro Tools, certainly it's a pretty unique case, though.
Yeah, Pro Tools. Well, I mean, you know, I think that people are sort of flopping it now. It's, you know, it's sort of like
this was over 10 years ago.
Yeah. Even though you sound like a very smart person, but I think that, you know, there may be some other ways of going about doing stuff. But Pro Tools, you're absolutely right.
On the other hand. You know, Dave, we have a mass audience here, and generally speaking,
I'm a Mac user.
Well, but you know, generally speaking, it's like if you teach a teenager to drive, you say when the light goes on, you put gas in the car. Generally speaking, that's true. Now, if you pull in a gas station and get robbed, it's a bad idea. But generally speaking, you put gas in the car, and generally speaking, you want to take an update. Now, if you're in a situation where you work for a large organization like the IRS, we mentioned earlier, what you have then is you have professionals that test the patches before they deploy them.
Right, right.
But
right,
for
exactly.
Joe Sixpack sitting in their car listening, yeah, patch.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for taking my call, and I really am enjoying the program.
Thanks,
Dave.
Thank you very
much for calling us. We got an email from Fred who says, I'm considering switching from a PC to an iMac 24. One, Consumer Reports in their latest issue warns against using Safari. Any comment? Two, can I hook up my PC to the Mac via cable to copy my photos to the Mac? And three, does the Mac come with free writing or database programs, or do I have to purchase all programs separately?
First, the big thing that Consumer Reports had with Safari was there's no anti-phishing feature built in.
Right.
So, you know,
right.
Like a Firefox, the latest one has that. If you go to a link that is obviously not who it says it is, like a great example is an email that has a link that says your PayPal password needs to be updated. Please go here. It turns out it's actually some spammer. So Safari can't do that. But if you try to, you know, be careful and use common sense, that's one way around it. You could also download Firefox. And we talked about OpenDNS, I think, a few episodes back, which is a great way to, you know, prevent that on your entire network, not just on the one computer. So that's Safari. And as far as transferring images from the PC, if they're on the same network, you could do it that way. If you're comfortable doing that, it's not too difficult to set up. If not, you can get like a USB memory stick and just copy things over that way. And to me, that's probably the simplest and easiest way to go.
The old term was sneaker net.
Sneaker net, yes.
Sneaker net, yeah.
And as for the programs, it comes with a trial for iWork, but I think if you're doing anything serious, you're probably going to want to buy that or buy Office 2008 for Mac.
Allison Drew, in free iPhones for college freshmen, allow me to amend that. Free iPhones for a few. college freshman.
Which college? Everybody be calling in.
All right. Well, if you're in Texas or Tennessee or Maryland, you too can get a free iPhone. But, you know, in Maryland, we're only giving it to 150 freshmen. We got a lot more than 150 freshmen.
Do you guys pay for the service too?
No. Yeah, the freshmen have to pay for the actual communication service. But you could use the internet over the campus wireless, so you could actually do without it. So the idea is that a number of universities are working with Apple to essentially get these mobiles into the hands of kids in classrooms where who knows what could they do? They could actually do instant research on the spot.
They could text message Kojo during class too. I mean, come
on. They could do instant polling and say, you know, what do you think of that guy, John Gilroy, and all do clickers, you know. But there can be emergency preparedness, class cancellations.
Are you
going to
have these pre-installed with bubble wrap and the Jedi lightsaber program?
Oh man, see, I wish that were the case. So we're actually we have a program at Maryland and that says you have to if you want this, you got to meet with us once a week, and we're really serious about what is it that you want to do, how do you want to change it, and making it happen, because we really think the whole iApp thing is awesome.
I could schmooze them on that one.
So these students will be monitored to see exactly how they will be using their free iPhones. We got an email from Jay who says, I came back from vacation to a blue screen, the repair shop up the street in which I don't have too much confidence, tried to fix it, then said the data was unrecoverable. They installed a new drive and reloaded Windows XP. Question, I can't get this system to reload the drivers for my old Epson Stylus Pro printer, which worked just fine on my previous version of XP. What can be done? Question two, is my data really unretrievable? Are there self-help options I can try?
Well, as I look out the window, I see some clouds rolling in here, and there may be a thunderstorm. And the lesson is that even if your machine is turned off at home, the fact that it's plugged into something, it can be vulnerable to power surges. I mean, it's the strangest thing. So you're on vacation and you come back. So I think a real safe approach might be just to physically unplug things before you go off on a vacation, probably before a thunderstorm rolls in. Next, when that surge hits, it can zap the printer and the computer, part of the printer, no printer, printer, lamp. There's no rhyme or reason to how surges work. And so you can try to load the driver yourself. And if the printer's not working, maybe the printer got zapped. So what you want to do is test it on a different machine with that driver and see if it works. As far as recovering from the thumb drive, we've gone through this many times. The usual suspects out there, InTrack, all kinds of utilities to try and recover from it. And really what it boils down to is, what's it worth to you, Buster? You know, what's it worth to you? You know?
Exactly.
Hey, what's it worth to you? Is it just some pictures, at a 10-year celebration for Kojo Namdi? Well, you know, we can forget about those. Those aren't very important. But if they're important pictures like Redskins pictures, then
Redskins,
then you can take and spend $400 or $500 to have them recovered, you see. So it really boils down to what it's worth.
I'll have you know that in the 10 years that I have been working here, I have done at least 100 times as much work as you have done over the past 20 years.
There's
or
no
something
question.
Like that.
No question.
Here's Jason. on the Dallas Toll Road. Jason, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I'm calling in reference to a previous caller who wanted to know about cognitive.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, good.
For games and such. When I was up at MIT, I learned about a very interesting game that was made up there called the Beer Game, which.
Yeah.
I like it. I know that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, despite the name, it's actually a sort of a learning game in which you act as if you were managing the supply chain of providing beer from the manufacturer through the wholesale distributor to the actual
worthwhile career.
Places. I'm sorry?
It's a worthwhile career?
No, not so much. maybe. Actually, the wholesale distributor probably makes a lot of money. And, of course, as we know, there are certain people who are running for office that have benefited from beer empires. So you never know where you might end up.
The Beer Game. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Beer Game. It's actually one of the very first learning games. This was way back, I think, in the 80s that they decided to try this out. And they found that people could actually learn some very interesting concepts by playing a video game, in essence. Now, the Beer Game probably isn't the best game. The interface is difficult to understand. It's very old. But I think if your previous caller just did a Google search on learning games, there are a number of games out there that are made to help people learn new things, and it might help with the cognitive disability that she seemed to be working with. So.
And Jason, you'll be happy to know that the beer game still is on the web.
Wow.
Despite the fact that it was created at MIT back in the 1960s.
Wow. Wow. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
It's older than I thought then.
Yeah.
Yes, you can go to beergame.mit.edu to find your beer game.
Wow.
And definitely do a search. In fact, I know I work at NASA right now, and we're developing a learning game for use inside of NASA to help people understand why it's important to share as much information as possible about your project, which is not our current culture. So,
does your boss at NASA know you're spending your time calling in on talking about
actually, I'm on the way to the airport for a meeting.
Oh, there you go.
So my time is both my own and not my own. As long as I make the flight, they don't really care.
Okay, thank you very much for your call, Jason. We got several emails about things we've discussed earlier. This one is about Comcast. From Garrett, the biggest issue that I see is that Comcast isn't providing tools to see your monthly totals. The only time you know you are in violation is when they issue the first of two strikes against you.
Exactly. There's no user interface when it comes to...
There's no meter on your house.
Nothing. You know, you have no idea. It's just, boom, you're gone.
No, run out of gas light. Fill up, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah,
this comment is about whether Chrome isn't as good as your favorite browser. One of the guests mentioned the 9 pages that you can start with in Chrome. The Opera browser, my favorite, has had this feature for years. They call it Speed Dial. There's a plugin for Firefox that does the same thing, and Firefox has a private browsing plugin which has the same functionality as Incognito Chrome. You haven't convinced me yet.
I think it's obvious that if someone who is bright like Allison could probably search around the internet for different utilities and patch
right,
them together.
Right. I mean, if you're installing plugins, you may not be someone who wants a built-in feature.
Right. And you may have 12, 15 different ones, and all of a sudden you'd have the equivalent of what Chrome can do. And so really there's not much new in Chrome, just it's put all together elegantly, I think. That's the strength of Chrome.
No, it's definitely been put together. It's also been streamlined. So the speed is absolutely something that that you will feel.
And finally, this from Chris in Fairfax. I downloaded Chrome as soon as it came out, and I'm loving it. It's fast, intuitive, and allows me to set 4 tabs to open up each time I start up Chrome. My 4 are iGoogle homepage, Gmail, Google Calendar, and Facebook. Funny thing, though, Chrome doesn't seem to have worked out the kinks with certain Flash functions. I tried to become a fan of Chrome on Facebook, but I needed Mozilla Firefox to do so. Some of the comment and become a fan Flash functions on Facebook don't yet work on Chrome.
Yeah, beta.
Beta.
Yeah, that's true.
So we've been having people exploring. We have about 10 seconds, John Gilroy. Our computer recently renewed our Spy Sweeper subscription, and it has had nothing but problems since. Can you recommend a reputable place to contact to have our computer looked at?
Advanced 2000 Alexandria, and they recommend Spy Sweeper, so they can all about it. You can find it in the unit very easy. I've dealt with them. I've had a lot of people dealt with them. They're fine.
John Gilroy is Director of Business Development at SolutionsDevelopers.com. Allison Druin is the Director of the Human-Computer Interaction Lab at the University of Maryland College Park. And Bill Harlow, a former Mac genius, is a Macintosh consultant with Mid-Atlantic Consulting. Thank you for joining us, Allison.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us, Bill.
Thank you.
John, it's over. See you later. I'm Kojo Nambi. Coming up tomorrow on the Kojo Nandi Show, Tech Tuesday explores cool new features that may tempt you to replace your Internet Explorer or Firefox browser software, and why the era of all-you-can-eat Internet service is ending. The computer guys are back. Plus, why the predator-prey relationship in the animal world is out of balance, and what's behind controversial plans to fix it. The Kojo Nandi Show, noon till 2 tomorrow on WAMU 88.